Welcome to Focus on Fuels, brought to you by StoneX. Your hosts are Trevor McClanahan, Risk Manager, and Alex Hodes, Director of Market Strategy from the StoneX Energy Desk. Alex and Trevor help fleet managers, fuel buyers, and energy procurement specialists gain control of fuel costs, boost margins, and keep their businesses competitive. Join them for another deep dive into the volatile energy markets.
Remember that the trading of derivatives such as futures, options, and over-the-counter products or swaps may not be suitable for all investors. Derivatives trading involves substantial risk of loss. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future results.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here on Focus on Fuels. I'm your host, Alex Hodes, and I'm here with my colleague, Trevor McClanahan. How's it going?
Not too bad, man. How are you?
Good. Let's get to going on what's happening in the markets. So we've kind of started the turn of the year with some fireworks.
Absolutely.
Could you kind of describe what's happening in the market and maybe what's driving that?
Yeah, a combination of about three things. I mean, maybe even more than that. But obviously the Trump administration coming in, that was one of them, but that actually hasn't been that dramatic as of yet. But what's been the biggest thing is weather, main driver, I would say. It kind of got things lifted off the ground. And then when Biden was exiting the office, he slapped more sanctions on Russia. Still a lot to kind of unfold on that and developing on it. But, you know, that's definitely changed the sentiment of the oil market in general, and has painted just more of a bullish picture in general for the future here. So the cold weather is starting to wash out. So, you know, that's definitely cooled the market off some, but, you know, still a lot to be, the cards are definitely not shown right now as far as what's going to go happen with Russia and then what the Trump administration is going to do going forward. So that combined with a lot of sideways action within the market for a very long time since really October is when we really started seeing that develop, has really kind of coiled the market up. And just for context here, when the market is going sideways for a long period of time like that, that really creates a spring effect. If you were to coil up a spring after you release that thing, it's going to really explode and the market's going to go one way or the other pretty dramatically. So we've seen that, and that's a lot of the options kind of market developing and a lot of kind of background work that's happening there, but it definitely made the market shoot up really fast in about a month time. And then now it's cooling off again with that weather washing out. So yeah, that's been the big driver here.
Yeah, I think we do want to say that last time we were in here, we were thinking that sanctions weren't going to have too much of an effect on the market. But like Trevor said, the market was kind of coiled and ready for something to kind of drive it one way or the other. Implied volatilities on options were near some of their historical lows. And in addition to that, there was a lot of managed money that was net short prior to those headlines coming out. So really, you kind of saw the market take off after the expanded sanctions were placed on Russia. But on kind of more of a fundamental note, I mean, I think there's a lot, those headlines were driving a lot of that price action, but underlying, the market had gotten, you know, a little bit more bullish, specifically on the heating fuel side. So heating oil specifically, propane specifically, they showed massive demand numbers in the recent weeks. And that's been kind of a driver of uptick in demand from what was previously forecasted. So I think, you know, those are really the things that have been driving it. But moving forward, I think we need to just kind of digest what the Trump administration's, how they are enforcing sanctions going forward and how those might have an effect on the market. We have had sanctions in place on Iran for several years, but we've seen Iran exports grow and be actually a quarter of year-over-year growth from 23 to 24 with regards to production growth. And so that's not been just a small number. That's really kind of allowed the market to not be as tight as it should be if these sanctions were actually enforced. And really, so really the question comes down to, do you think the Trump administration is going to enforce these sanctions or not?
Yeah. You know, I've developed this reasoning a little bit more. This is a complete opinion, but I think it really does come down to how the Trump administration's relations with Saudi and the OPEC in general kind of unfolds. He's already made comments on he's going to call for Saudi and just OPEC in general to increase production. if they answer that call and say, yeah, we'll buy, you know, we'll agree. I already had a conversations with MBS regarding their basically revenues coming into the US and then buying more goods from us, shooting for $1 trillion worth of expenditures coming from Saudi. You know, that would be huge. And not only that, but really, you know, what that means for OPEC and what it really ultimately means for Iran. Because if OPEC does agree to that and increases their production, ultimately benefits them, then I think Trump does enforce those sanctions like he did previously, but, you know, in his previous time in office. He ultimately wants oil prices to stay under $80 a barrel. I think that that's kind of his target, right? He thinks that's good for the economy, good for everything he wants to do. But he, in order for him to do that, he's got to have, you know, outside help. And OPEC answers that call. I think they definitely will tighten the sanctions on Iran, enforcing them. And maybe that actually matters a lot for Russia too on their sanctions. Really comes down to both of them.
Yeah, I think that's kind of been something that, I mean, obviously it's just speculation at this point, but yeah. What we need to know is that there's a lot of barrels on the sideline from OPEC, and that's been kind of keeping this floor on the market. And, you know, they've, at least from their perspective, it appears that they are kind of defending a certain price in Brent crude oil. What that target is not stated explicitly by them, but through the course of their actions, it's kind of around that $70 Brent or $65 WTI. And so they've been trying to bring back barrels to the market, just delaying their production cuts and delaying and delaying. But really, at some point, that's not good for their look if they're going to say they're going to do something and not follow through on it. And in the meantime, yeah, other producers are kind of taking up market share there. So that could be kind of the best of both worlds for OPEC if they do agree to, you know, proceed with. They are expected to bring additional barrels back online in April. And, you know, they might just go ahead with that and without that crashing the market. And that could be backed up by, you know, a tighter enforcements of those sanctions on Iran. I personally think that it seems so when analyzing kind of the capacity at which Iran and Russia or just countries that are under scrutiny and are under sanctions, they kind of go through different alternative routes to kind of conceal their barrels of oil. They'll go to areas like the UAE, Singapore, Malaysia, blending barrels, ship-to-ship transfers, and that really is concealing where these barrels are coming from. So then the end user or the buying country, most likely China or India, they say, hey, well, these barrels are from Malaysia, or these barrels are from Singapore, or these barrels are from this ship that's not on the sanctions list. So it's like there are methods to get around the existing sanctions. So it really does come down to how tightly you're going to sanction those countries or the companies involved with those ship-to-ship transfers. Are you going to put surveillance on these ship-to-ship transfers? And really, do you want to do that? You know, you can act hard, and whether you want to really follow through on it is another question. But I think the ability to circumvent those sanctions is still out there. So the spare capacity of the dark fleet is like 3 million barrels per day or 4 million barrels per day. And when I say the dark fleet, this is sanctions that are tankers that have basically evaded sanctions in the past or are on some blacklist or just, you know, they turn off their transponders so nobody knows where they're at. There's plenty of capacity there to circumvent these sanctions. So you kind of just need to analyze the data of like where the flows are now, where they were prior to. And we've started looking at those. And in January, you can see there is a slight dip in Iranian crude oil loadings, but it's not super substantial at this moment. January tends to be kind of their lower exporting month in general.
So in my opinion, I think the ability of for both sides is going to be important. So, you know, on the US's side or in NATO in general, I think they do have the ability to enforce these sanctions harder. And it really just comes down to what oil prices are doing at the time, you know, and what card Trump plays next. If OPEC agrees to bringing them back that production, they'll happily enforce those sanctions on Russia and Iran. So that'll kind of naturally inflate and balance the market, really. But if OPEC doesn't answer that call, he might turn a blind eye, just like Biden did, you know, with that. And just because back in the previous administration, we got to realize, too, like, we're not picking battles on, you know, on the politics aspect of it. But Trump simply, his crude prices were in, what, 60, 70s range when he was in office and enforcing those Iranian sanctions. So it's pretty easy for him to enforce them, right? But when Biden was in office and not enforcing those Iranian sanctions, it was harder for him to enforce those because crude was at $90 a barrel. It didn't make a lot of sense. So I really do think it does come down to what OPEC's all is answering yes or no to what Trump. I've read a lot of reports from like Javier Blas that, you know, he's got some pretty good opinion pieces out there that I don't know that's necessary for me to really elaborate on that much more. But I think that in general, it's going to come down to what OPEC decides. Yes or no, Trump, we'll back you. And to some degree, they'll be stabbing their OPEC partners in the back by doing that, because obviously Russia's top of the list on that.
Yeah, that's kind of what makes me think that the administration might choose more so to stop barrels on the Iranian side of things. Yeah. And then, you know, maybe still have the sanctions in place on Russia, but not really enforce them. But either way, it is a risk of supply disruptions. And we've seen 200 to 300 barrels per day of loadings down in Iran as of the last month. So if things are going to tighten or are already tightening, we need to kind of continue looking at those barrels that are flowing outside of Russia and outside of Iran and who's buying those. A lot of these right now, you can see that they're just going to Singapore or Malaysia. So probably still blowing out and somebody's buying them. I would assume it's probably China or some large demanding country. But until we see like a large tightening of the barrels, we won't really have a grasp on the quantities. But it's something you need to bake into your analysis of like, this is a risk moving forward. But like you said, there's also the risk of OPEC bringing those barrels.
That seems to be the most calm way or easy way to please all parties, except for Iran, obviously, which I think everybody's okay with.
At least from the U.S. and the
Saudi
front, I would agree.
Yeah.
They tend to not be...
They're the first ones to go, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why I think those barrels might be... Some of those barrels might be stopped. But on kind of a domestic front with regards to crude oil markets, one other topic at hand has been the Canadian tariffs. And they're expected... or they're supposed to kick in on February 1. We've heard some talk from Alberta's premier that she believes that they are only going to go through with this. But I think we might have touched a little bit on the effects of them, but maybe we could just go over that a little bit and kind of what the fears and concerns are.
Yeah, it seems like the rhetoric is changing a little bit. They're backing Trump administration, at least, that is. It seems to be backing off the aggression with kind of how they're talking about this. So it's changing it slightly. I wouldn't be surprised if they delay it again, to be honest. That's probably the first thing that comes to mind to me, just because they haven't really had a chance to discuss this that much. But, you know, from overall, though, I think they're both parties should be very motivated to get a deal done. I mean, it affects both sides dramatically on the Canada front. Mexico side, maybe not much. But Trump has a pretty simple ask, and it's not really that hard for Canada really step in and do what he's asking. All he's asking is basically for there to be tighter restrictions on migration and the fentanyl, whatever that is, trade. So, you know, with those restrictions in place there, that wouldn't be that difficult for Canada to pull off. Obviously, on the Mexico side, it's more difficult, tons more traffic going back and forth on that side of it. But I don't know that Canada has to do nearly as much to impress Trump on it.
And I think, so just to put it into perspective on the oil market, that makes crude imports from the U.S. imports 60% of their total imports come from Canada. So it is a large, large portion of our imported crude oil. And a lot of that, those Midwest refineries don't have any other access. So, you know, who's truly going to be hurt on this at the start if this does come to play is going to be the consumer that are buying these refined products in the Midwest or upper Midwest. So, I mean, it's kind of something that could affect the market, but it's going to be more of a regional basis than anything.
Yeah, and I might disagree slightly on that. And just because, so there's 4.1 million barrels a day that come over the border from Canada to the U.S. They don't have pipeline infrastructure up there like the U.S. does. So really those barrels they've kind of went all in on the U.S. buying their crude. It's going to be really hard for them to take those barrels to market. I don't know what that looks like exactly, and I don't know that anybody has a really good opinion or data that maybe there's Canadian analysts out there that do. But I mean, to me, I think that there's at least 2 million barrels at risk of global crude production just because I don't know those barrels make it to market anymore. I don't know how they get to market. And maybe that, again, I'm not an analyst. I don't have a focus on that necessarily, but for me, it's a conservative estimate that roughly half of those barrels won't make it to market just because simply they don't have anywhere to go. They're landlocked up there.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a tie with regards to Canada has less diversification with regards to offloading its supply, but it would be hard for me to believe that the refineries are going to just, I mean, perhaps they can ramp down their production, but I mean, if they got to buy barrels to, they're just trying to turn those barrels. So maybe, you know, if they're going to pay a little extra, then they're just going to hand that down to the consumer. So
you're saying we're just going to keep paying, we're going to pay the tariff.
I mean, it would be hard not to, because they need those barrels. If the demand's downstream of them, and if they're still making money on it, I think they're going to still be purchasing those barrels. And it's difficult for them to find an alternative source, like from the Gulf Coast or anything like that. On the margin, yeah, there may be a few barrels here and there that don't get purchased, but all in all, like I would expect that they just continue to pay that tariff, and then they turn that down to their consumers. I think that's probably the short-term consequence of it. But like you said, if that comes to the place where then refineries are tamping down their how much crude they're inputting, then you make that's one less buyer for Canada's crude, and then you could see stranded barrels. But I think this is all kind of, you know, speculation of how this is going to go. So
rail rates will go up probably.
Yeah.
That's one thing that will definitely increase.
Yes. So, I mean, we do need to kind of know what's going on there, but it hasn't come to fruition quite yet. So I think we could focus on one topic that's kind of more of a global perspective, I'll talk more about kind of our refining because we are just kind of touching on it. Recent weeks, we've seen Gulf Coast refiners actually start turning down those utilization rates. This is kind of a seasonal trend when some refiners start to undergo some maintenance, but actually this year, maintenance schedule is relatively light. So when we're looking at data, we think that that's actually some unplanned outages that are occurring specifically in the Gulf Coast. But I think this, again, goes to kind of that cold snap that where we had snow in New Orleans and Houston, the Port of Houston getting closed. So I think some of that has affected kind of the refined product supply there. But, you know, in turn, that's also less crude oil barrels that are being used up. But after our recent DOE report, so the inventory report, we saw a massive draw, absolutely massive in propane and diesel, and you saw slight builds in crude. So, and overall, though, total petroleum inventories were down, I think, 12 million barrels on the week. So, honestly, inventories are still somewhat tight, but the U.S. just has so much capacity. Really, it's just kind of the refining capacity has expanded so much. It seems like we've been in this tight inventories, but really haven't had that huge spike in prices. So it's kind of been in that same zone. And, you know, we have the supply concerns about OPEC and Iran and Russia. And really, we've just had this sideways market.
Yeah, it's affected more kind of the time spreads.
Yeah.
More so than anything. And just like you just said, there's just been massive draws, but they're recoverable draws because of the capacity.
And I would say a lot of it is, you know, seasonality. And that's what's been driving a lot of this market. I will say one topic that's kind of in the past, it hadn't got as much, or it got some attention, I guess, probably 2 years ago or maybe last year, where we saw Ukrainian drones attacking Russian refineries. And so everybody was like, oh man, the diesel exports from Russia might be affected. Like, crack spreads are going to go through the roof for diesel. And then like nothing happened. But it kind of at that time, we saw diesel exports jump from China and refining capacity was getting built out. So that kind of overwhelmed that supply disruption. So these are actually picking up again in Russia. And I saw an article, you sent me an article earlier today, and they are saying that some barrels from one of Russia's Baltic ports is being disrupted, crude oil exports, and that's 650,000 barrels per day. So if that's, you know, another supply concern, that could be some risk in the near term. But until we see like that sustained, it's hard to really buy into it.
Russia's really good at recovering.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, they initially said the sanctions are going to be 3 million barels, and then, you know, they export near record levels.
I think that speaks volumes on how reliant they are on their energy sector to fund this war, though, because they're like, well, we're at all costs, we are making sure things recover in the energy side. We're fixing everything that's broken.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting of the like attacks on refineries, because there's a lot at play on the market. Because it's, you know, you have to think about it multiple steps down. Like if they affect these refineries, you know, sometimes they can just repair these, but it takes a little bit of time. But some of them, it's like, okay, well, if they have this refining capacity down, then they're not going to be able to use up as much crude. So maybe they'll ramp up their crude exports. So, but, you know, we haven't seen that either. So it's kind of something we need to keep our eyes on. My thought is that this might be something that kind of fades into the background because, again, you know, perhaps this comes down to what the administration, one, has the ability to stop or allow with regards to oil flows. I think that just outweighs this. This is just kind of one of those headlines. But I think those are really the topics that we need to look at going forward. I think we are personally, in my opinion, I think we're experiencing the tightest of supplies that we're going to see
probably
this year. So,
I agree. Yeah. I think that, you know, here's been my point to all my customer base. I don't think anybody expects crude to get to like $90 this year unless something drastically changes. But I do think that we're going to fall into another range of 70s, lower 70s, maybe high 60s. I still don't see crude falling below $65 a barrel. There's still that strong support level there. Been very long term. But beyond that, we have a new president in office that loves to rock the boat.
Yeah.
So there's going to be plenty of spikes if he continues that. And, you know, that's why we've been encouraging guys, if we get back into this lower level, you know, we've been watching the CFTC report heavily, and that's something we'll talk about here soon. But, you know, if you get another opportunity to buy whatever your product that you're using, diesel, gas, whatever it is, when crude is in the high 60s, I think it's probably a good idea, because you're going to avoid those spikes throughout the year that are going to be really make things kind of lopsided on your cost.
Yeah. And I would say that the, like you said, watching CFTC numbers, and we can discuss that in kind of a future episode, but we do analyze this pretty frequently, but that really just tells you about like how much risk there is, headline risk existing in the market. And currently, I think we have more downside risk than upside risk due to positioning. So
yeah, and for the guys that know that, we might do a podcast on just like an actual educational aspect of this kind of, because it's a pretty confusing topic. But anybody that's kind of involved in this is the managed money right now. That's been really long, you know, in the market, meaning, you know, they've got a lot of length out there. They think that prices are going to go higher. I don't know exactly what the logic is behind that, but, you know, that leaves a lot of downside risk because they're speculators. These are the speculators of the world. When you start, the market starts falling some, they get margin called. Think about the psychology of that. It's just going to cause a sell-off because people are kind of nervous, if you will. And then we compare that to the commercial traders as well. These are all your big traders, you know, big gun bores, you know, massive oil traders throughout the world that have all the assets floating around. They carry a lot of the physical crude that sits in the market. And right now they're heavily hedged up and they got a lot of shorts on. So that's a pretty good indication that they think the market has some downside risk to it. And that's kind of where my head is right now as well, from a positioning standpoint.
Yeah. And I think for those traders, a lot of the barrels they hedge, but there's on the margin, they can kind of take a position, right, you know, one way or the other.
They've got natural, the commercial guys have natural length because they're sitting on crude barrel, like physical crude barrels. So, you know, if they're 100% hedged, it's going to be just more short positions that they're showing, basically.
And I think that's all we kind of have today to talk about. We kind of dove a little bit deeper in some topics than we originally anticipated. But I do want to let you all know that I did a webinar along with a paper that we will have available if you would like to see it. It's a crude and refined products outlook for 2025. So do check that out and, follow us up next time.
Yeah, we'll be at WPMA too, if anybody's going to be in Vegas. And
18th, 19th, 20th of February.
We'll be there. Stop by our booth. We'll be at booth number 125. If anybody listening is going to be there, I'd love to see you there. And follow up with Alex's reports there. They did a great job on both of those, the market outlook video and his white paper that he wrote.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Focus on Fuels podcast with Trevor McClanahan and Alex Hoves, brought to you by StoneX, NASDAQ ticker SNEX, a global Fortune 100 financial services company with a century of commodities risk management experience. Subscribe to Focus on Fuels on your preferred podcasting platform for insights on managing fuel and energy price volatility, and to sign up for the free StoneX Morning Energy Brief newsletter. Email focusonfuels@stonex.com or visit www.stonex.com. Please feel free to rate, review, and share this episode with colleagues. Until next time.